to Awaken Your Awareness from How to Make Your Thoughts Disappear. For starters, I don't know how familiar you are with my story or my background, pretty much other than the crazy stuff I shared with you in chapter one, but I barely finished high school and that's the extent of my education. You'll obviously note that I'll be talking a lot about meditation and our thought processes throughout this book. I also have no formal training in psychology or meditation practices. This book is a very raw layman's description of meditation, or at the very least, I've put it together in a way that works for me, and I think it can also work for you. I may not be the most creative person in the world, but I do love discovering what's out there. I also enjoy trying to make already established and accepted systems more effective and efficient when I can. That doesn't mean I have improved on traditional forms of meditation, but I have found some additional techniques that work well with what we have in the 21st century. Now, what I do know is this system works for me, and I found that it to be very extremely powerful. The first basic step in learning to have or how to make your thoughts disappear is to become totally aware of what is going on within you, your mind and body, consciously being in the present at all times. And if you're not totally aware of yourself, you cannot begin to respond to the need to make quick changes or make change at all for that matter. Now, when a person is not totally aware of the things that trigger certain actions or reactions, thoughts and feelings, life will ultimately control them instead of them controlling their life. And being aware of what triggers certain thoughts and feelings is the start of controlling and changing them whenever necessary. We live in an instant gratification society. We want everything to be fixed overnight or now. And why not? We see critics destroy and rebuild in one-hour television shows. We see armies raised and weapons built to save the world in a two-hour movie. Why shouldn't we expect these things to be real in our own mundane lives? We want quick fixes for everything, and this expectation can be one of the biggest obstacles to our personal success. Now, here's a typical example that will probably shock you. Take a guess at what the fastest growing demographics of mood enhancing medications are in the world today. Preschoolers. Can you imagine that? Preschoolers are the fastest growing users of mood enhancing medications in our society. For me, the thought that comes to mind is, how are adults allowing themselves to justify this? And what about the doctors who prescribe them to these small children? I believe it's because of a lack of accountability and not wanting to take ownership for a problem, any problem. It's called a quick fix syndrome, or QFC. We often go into this excuse mode to justify such easy but unnecessary solutions, and I'm sure you've heard of this before. I want to discuss depression among children. Then children are depressed because they come from broken homes and are sometimes left to themselves for several hours until a single parent returns from work. Children see all the good things in the world of television or on the internet or on their phones or whatever, and then have to look at their miserable lives when TV or the internet or social media is turned off. They may see a stream of strangers entering and leaving their home and have trouble with uncertainty of having to adapt to that situation. They listen to the older kids in the neighborhood talking about committing crimes and talking about what they want, but the little ones don't have the means of getting any of those things which they think they want. My child won't listen to me. He's so hyperactive. He's bouncing off the walls. His teacher can't even control him. He can't focus on one single thing at a time. I'm not a doctor. I don't know how to slow him down. And that's why doctors make the big bucks. Let them take care of my child. It's obviously a medical problem. I already have enough problems of my own. The list of excuses some parents make may even include some valid excuses on why they allow doctors to prescribe depressants for their three-year-olds. But is that really the best way to handle the problem? Is it the only way? Absolutely not to both questions. There are both more ways and better ways to help children with hyperactive problems or a lack of concentration problems that we need to consider. The quick fix is meds, and it's even easier to justify once the child or adult starts taking them because they actually work, quote unquote, right? Give any child or adult a pill or an alcoholic drink, and of course it's going to slow them down. But just because it slows them down and they seem to focus better, that doesn't solve the core issue. It doesn't stop there. What about the doctors who give out prescriptions as if they were candy? Again, it's the QFC, the simple bandage on the large wound that doesn't come close to solving the problem. My point in sharing this with you is that if a person is always learning to look for and settle for easy and cheap solutions, it becomes an internal conflict when they decide they want total self-mastery, including the powerful self-mastery of making your thoughts disappear. I consider myself incredibly aware of my thoughts and actions and emotions, but even still, I occasionally catch myself unconsciously going down a path that isn't taking me in the direction that I need or I want to go. This is part of the wax on, wax off mindset. You have to set the right mindset in place, and that's what I'm doing with you right now. Mastering the techniques in this book will only come from having the right mindset and making what I'm sharing with you a way of life, not just a quick fix, but an honest-to-goodness, life-altering technique. I believe I speak from experience. After going through all the many tragedies in my life, I was taking the meds. I was drinking the alcohol. It was extremely difficult for me to cope with my problems. I was an emotional wreck. I believe if I had run to a doctor or a shrink with my issues every time I wanted to cry, I would have been diagnosed with just about every psychiatric problem under the sun, including post-traumatic stress disorder, you know, the PTSD, incidental depression, inability to cope with suicidal tendencies, and the list would go on and on. So total awareness of self, along with changing your belief system, can make monumental changes in your life. I often wear a wristband we offer on our website that reads, "Where I'm at, I'm not at my potential." My awareness and frequent reminder of this does a lot for me. Though I know I would probably be diagnosed as having attention deficit hyperactive disorder, ADHD, right? I refuse to pigeonhole myself in that box, and here's a typical example. People may tell you that there's such thing as writer's block. That's a limited thought. As I'm writing, or in this case, reading this audio or sharing this audio with you audibly right now, I have planned on setting time aside days ago to do this. And if I don't feel like writing or reading this off to you in audio, oh well, I have to write anyway. I need to write at least 4 hours straight every day. If I feel like writing for only 2 hours, it's not enough. I need to write for 4 hours. If I decide to throw in the towel after 2 hours, I can, but I choose not to do so. If I bought into the ADHD thing, then that would allow me to validate the diagnosis of ADHD, and I would be able to quit after 2 hours with a clear conscience. So I've decided to change my story and simply tell myself, wherever I'm at, wanting to stop writing at 2 hours, I'm not at my potential. Write for an additional 2 hours or more. With this kind of awareness and a solid belief to go with it, I'm able to break through as many mental limitations and mental stereotypes that get in my way. So I'll keep my ADHD for flying airplanes, where I'm always multitasking and moving around, pushing buttons, flipping switches, and doing 10 things at a time. I'm always very careful what I buy into and what I choose to believe or not believe. It can be very easy to believe what you've been told to believe or what you've told yourself to believe. Because of this lack of awareness, we often throw common sense out of the window along with our ability to reason. Here's a very powerful reason why or how this happens. If you meet someone who is richer than you are, or like myself, has written books or has been on TV, in your mind, if you're not careful, you will place a higher status on that person, higher than perhaps they deserve. And then if you're not careful, you'll believe everything they say. Then if you're not careful, you'll become a sheep being led to the slaughter. To prove that, at one time, just about everybody on this planet used to believe that the earth was flat. Cult leader Jim Jones took nearly 1,000 people to their death because they bought into his beliefs to convince them to believe, and they all committed suicide with his potassium cyanide Kool-Aid. So don't think you're immune to buying or believing things that simply aren't true or that don't make sense. I recall the new excitement that I had when I left the sect that I had been in. I was finally able to think for myself and openly express myself, questioning my beliefs and not profess to believe something that just because I had been told to believe it all my adult life that it was true. When I started questioning so many other things in my life, I came to discover so much more about myself. I assure you, there are things about yourself that you haven't discovered yet, that you haven't uncovered. And I hope this book will enable you to do that. And here's a great example of that. For a few years after leaving the sect, I had been chatting over the phone with a young lady. And because of her height, she was always tuned into people's height and very aware of it. She was 5'10". And when we finally came face to face to meet, she asked me how tall I was. And I told her I was 6'1". She replied, "No way, you can't be." I insisted that I was. She challenged me to get a measuring tape, which I did. We measured, and I'm actually 6'2". And I was quite surprised. I wondered, how in the world did that happen? Then after some thought, I figured it out. My height is on my driver's license and my pilot's license. So I looked at my pilot's license, and it read 6'1". And I looked at my driver's license, and it said 6'2". You see, every 1 to 2 years, I have to renew my pilot's license under my instructor certificate, as I am a certified flight instructor. I've always said my height was 6'1", because I know that from renewing my pilot's license as often as I do. However, my driver's license is only renewed once every 10 years, and that's why I never pay attention to the height, and I only look at it once every 10 years. Isn't that interesting? And the moral of the story is, don't believe everything you believe. Here's another interesting observation about how we believe things that are not necessarily true. All my life, I've hated broccoli. It makes me gag. Just the smell of it turns my stomach. Think of a food that as a child you hated. Well, if you've hated that food from childhood, the chances are that as an adult, you haven't tried that food again since you were a child. So how do you really know you still hate that food? Mostly because you've told yourself you've hated it over and over for decades. You've programmed yourself to believe you hate it. That's interesting about the power of our beliefs, is that when we begin to believe something, our brain seems to consistently look for ways to validate those beliefs, whether they're true or not. This creates a reinforcement of your beliefs and makes them that much more real to you. Then one day, I decided to find out if I still really hated broccoli, or if I've just been programming myself for all these years. Of course, if you hated a food as a child, when you think of trying that food again, the first thing you do is to contort your face, right? And how gross is that? So I got the broccoli ready and made sure I wasn't going to screw up my face like I had done all my life just thinking about it. I took a bite, and it was nothing like I had programmed myself to believe. It really wasn't that bad. Now, I won't tell you broccoli is my favorite food, but I don't have a problem eating it anymore. Now, I wonder what foods you've programmed yourself to avoid for many years that maybe if you try again, you might have a new and enjoyable experience. Seriously, think about it and give it a try. I'll discuss in a later chapter how you've actually used your nervous system in such a way that you've trained it to cause you not to like certain foods. Then what comes next to mind? If we've actually programmed ourselves to believe something simple like not eating certain foods, and then what about other things we believe that have not been true in our lives? I hope I'm making my point clear. Be very careful what you believe to be true. I also encourage you to keep an open mind when reading this book or listening to this audio without total awareness of what is going on around you, regardless of what you do or don't believe. It's hard to be free from prejudices against other things or other people. Subchapter, feel the sand. I have a good friend of mine whose name is Dean, and Dean can free dive to depths of 75 feet or more and stay underwater for up to 5 minutes straight, and that is not an easy task. But he didn't learn this skill overnight. He was actually taught how to do this by a world-famous diver, and anyone can be taught the skills to do that, though the outcome may be different and vary from person to person. Here is how Dean was taught. First of all, here is not how he was taught. He didn't learn to do this by going into the water and holding his breath for longer periods of time each time he dove, making an attempt to increase his time under the water. That would only seem to make sense. His mentor actually brought him to the beach and dug a hole for him, which is big enough for him to fit in. Then he placed sand all over his body so he only was exposed from his neck up. Then his teacher poured water over the sand that was covering his chest. This caused the sand to become very heavy on his chest. And one might wonder, well, what was the purpose of doing this? The answer is quite interesting. The water over the sand made the sand much heavier. Every time Dean breathed in and out, the weight of the sand causes inhaling and exhaling to become more difficult. He felt the smallest amount of movement when breathing in and out because of the weight of the wet sand on his chest. Now, you could say he became hyper aware or hypersensitive to these movements, even though he knew beforehand this exercise was all about learning to control his breathing. This then created a tremendous awareness of how to be more sensitive to his breathing process while under control stress. The control stress in this case was the extra weight of the sand and the water against his chest. Awareness is so powerful. To me, it's a way of life, and using it is like a muscle. The concept of awareness can be like an exercise, and you can become proficient at it. Here's a very powerful example of this. Echolocation on a bike. Years ago, I watched a TV segment of a young boy in his teens who was born totally blind. What made this interview really amazing is that this boy was riding a bike through the streets without assistance. Keep in mind, he's totally blind. How in the world did he learn to do that? He used his ears. That's right, he used his ears to see. He would get on his bike and make clicking sounds from his mouth. Then, much like a bat uses its own, you know, built-in radar system, he trained himself to listen to where and how the sounds he made. Clicks remade with his tongue bounced off the things around him and then returned to him. This is how he guided himself through the streets in between parked cars and other objects in the neighborhood. How amazing. In fact, he actually started teaching other blind people how to do the same thing. And to me, that's fascinating. There is so much human potential we have not yet learned to tap into. According to this young boy, anyone can learn to do this echolocation. For most people, they'll never learn such a skill because they're not blind, nor are they forced to learn it. Now, if you were to become blind, there could be a chance you might want to check it out, this kid, and learn how he does it, and I can assure you I would. It could be that important to many of us. It's my hope that you find this information as important as I have stated, and it's hard for me to even explain to you the amazing sleep that I have each night. And keep in mind, while I'm on my promotional tour and speaking, I can end up sleeping in 3 or 4 different beds and as many hotels in less than 1 week, not to mention the emotional control and health benefits that come along with getting a good night's sleep. In the previous 3 years alone, while I was writing this book, I have given over 600 presentations. And as I had mentioned, all the traveling to different cities, sleeping in different hotels and different beds, this has been one of the keys to maintaining this fast-paced life. And I will continue to discuss the benefits of getting more and better sleep by using my technique, but this is just the tip of the iceberg when we include the emotional and mental control that you'll also enjoy learning while reading this book or listening to this audio. And as we continue through the rest of this audio or book program, we'll discuss my techniques with the goal to preparing the body by preparing the mind to start slowing down in order to begin making your thoughts disappear. Let's not stop here. The fun is just about to begin.
This concludes this chapter of How to Make Your Thoughts Disappear by Gary Cox.